This is a lecture given at St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas. Visit our website, stdave.org.
So welcome. Thank you for taking time to be here to journey together with some words from Thomas Merton. So my name is Mona West, and I'm the Director of Adult Formation here at St. David's and have been a Merton fan for a long time. So I'm really glad to see all of you here today. Some folks are kind of put off by him because his writing can be kind of a little dense, you know, but so I'm glad you're here. So I want to take a little bit of time just to do an overview of his life. So you do have a handout there that gives you sort of key events in his life, but also a listing of his writings. He was a prolific writer. And one of the things he struggled with when he went into the monastery in Gethsemane was his fame as a writer. You know, he published The Seven Story Mountain, which was his autobiography, that was an immediate success. And so he really struggled with how to sort of be this cloistered monk and embrace solitude, but also fame as a writer. So that was just a tension in his writing and in his work. So let me just, as I said, just kind of hit the highlights a little bit of his life. He was born January 31st, 1915 in Prades, France. His parents were artists. His mother died when he was six of cancer. His father died of a brain tumor when he was 16. And before he died, his father appointed appointed Dr. Tom Bennett as a guardian for Thomas Merton. And Tom Bennett was a caretaker for Thomas Merton after his parents passed. He was educated. Thomas was in Ockham School in England and Clare College in Cambridge. He was expelled from Cambridge for raucous and irresponsible behavior. and he wound up in the United States at Columbia University, where he wrote a thesis on William Blake and completed a master's degree in English. He had a spiritual awakening began having these stirrings when he was visiting Rome. He found himself looking into churches and discovered their great Byzantine mosaics with pictures of the life of Christ. And so I want to read just a brief excerpt from Seven Story Mountain where he talks about that experience. He says, "I was fascinated by these Byzantine mosaics. I began to haunt the churches where they were to be found. And as an indirect consequence, all the other churches that were more or less of the same period. And thus, without knowing anything about it, I became a pilgrim. I was unconsciously and unintentionally visiting all the great shrines of Rome and seeking out their sanctuaries with some of the eagerness and avidity and desire of a true pilgrim, though not quite for the right reason. And yet it was not for a wrong reason either. For these mosaics and frescoes and all the ancient altars and thrones and sanctuaries were designed and built for the instruction of people who were not capable of immediately understanding anything higher. The saints of those forgotten days had left upon the walls of their churches words which, by the peculiar grace of God, I was able in some measure to apprehend, although I could not decode them all. But above all, the realest and most immediate source of this grace was Christ himself, present in those churches in all his power and in his humanity, in his human flesh, and his material, physical, corporeal presence. How often I was left entirely alone in these churches with the tremendous God and knew nothing of it, except I had to know something of it, as I say, obscurely. And it was he who was teaching me who he was more directly than I was capable of realizing." So the kind of the beginning of Thomas Merton's spiritual awakening. He was received in the Catholic Church on November 16th, 1938. And the following year, Merton was planning to begin work on his PhD when he realized he wanted to be a priest, and he began learning about religious orders. he talks about this in his autobiography, Seven Story Mountain. He started with the Franciscans first, and they wouldn't take him. So he wound up with the Trappists. There's a story there, but I won't take time to tell it. So after spending a week, the Holy Week of 1941 on retreat of the, in the Abbey of Gethsemane, right outside of Louisville, Kentucky, Merton decided to become a Trappist monk. And on December the 10th, which is today, December the 10th, 1941, at age 26, he entered the Abbey of Our Lady of Gethsemane, a Trappist monastery, and spent the next 27 years of his life there. As I mentioned earlier, he presumed that entering the monastery would end his writing career, and he actually burned several manuscripts before entering the monastery. But his superiors recognized the gift that he had for writing, and so they encouraged him to continue to write and actually assigned him time to do his writing so that the word of the monastic life and the monastery could be made public. And as I mentioned, he struggled over the years to balance his vocation to solitude with his literary career. And I'll just read this little excerpt. It's a prayer, actually, from one of his books, Entering the Silence, where he is praying to Mary just about that whole struggle. He says, "Lady, Queen of Heaven, pray me into solitude and silence and unity, that all my ways may be immaculate in God. Let me be content with whatever darkness surrounds me, finding him always by me in his mercy. Let me keep silence in this world, except insofar as God wills and in the way he wills it. Let me at least disappear into the writing I do. It should mean nothing special to me, nor harm my recollection. The work could be a prayer. Its results should not concern me." His books and his journals and his letters became a primary way that he lived his vows, and a primary way that he opened the contemplative life to others. And I would say a primary way for his activism. If you look at the list of books there, especially in the 1960s, I mean, he wrote books and in his journals about issues around racism, war, creation, the environment. So he was quite an activist in his writing, as well as opening folks to the contemplative and spiritual life. So he developed an interest in Eastern religions early on in his literary career and continued to explore the relationship between Christian meditation and contemplation and Buddhist practice. When he published The Wisdom of the Desert in 1960, he asked Zen master D.T. Suzuki to write the introduction to the volume because of the Zen quality that he saw in the writings of the Fathers of the Desert. And the abbot of his monastery at the time refused to have the introduction from the Buddhist monk included in the publication. But almost a decade later, in the wake of Vatican II, Suzuki's essay finally appeared in another of Merton's books, Zen and the Birds of Appetite. So in 1968, he was granted permission to travel to Asia to visit Buddhist shrines. He met with religious leaders and attended an ecumenical conference in India. In October of 1968, he spent 8 days with the Dalai Lama to learn about the meditative practices of Tibetan Buddhism. And both monks were deeply knowledgeable about and deeply committed in their traditions. And despite their differences, they discovered that they had much in common at that level of practice and experience. On December 10th, today's date, 1968, after speaking at a meeting of Asian Benedictines and Cistercians in Bangkok, Thailand, Merton went back to his room for a shower and was electrocuted when he turned on a fan. So it's really sort of moving to me to think that we're gathered here today, December 10th, 2023, as we think about Advent. And Merton, really, Merton's whole life was an Advent when you think about it, that preparing and welcoming and living in that tension that Father Chuck talked about this morning in his sermon. He went into the monastery December 10th, 1941, and he died December 10th, 1968. So some 25 years after they met in Dharamsala, India, this is what the Dalai Lama wrote about Merton. The Dalai Lama says, "More striking than his outward appearance, which was memorable in itself, was the inner life that he manifested." There's a picture of Merton. "I could see he was truly humble and a deeply spiritual man. This was the first time I had been struck by such a feeling of spirituality in anyone who professed Christianity. It was Merton who first introduced me to the real meaning of the word Christian." So from the Dalai Lama. So that's just a very brief overview of Merton's life. And I would commend his journals to you. All of his writing's incredible, but if you are really interested to know more about just his life, he was a great friend of Joan Baez, for example, and she used to come visit him at the monastery, and they'd take a bottle of wine and go out and have a picnic. So just stuff like that you can pick up through his journals. If you don't want to buy or read through all of his journals, this is a great collection of most of his journals and sort of an edited version of some of his writings from those journals called The Intimate Merton. The Joan Baez piece is in here. So I thought what we'd do with our time that we have together is to look at some of the, at least two pieces of writing from Merton that have to do with Advent. Of course, he was a prolific poet as well as a journalist and a novelist and an essayist and a writer of letters. And so we'll look at his poem titled Advent. But before we do that, I thought we'd look at this piece from an essay that he wrote on Advent called Advent, Hope or Delusion. And this is it comes from this book. This is another great volume. Of course, it's out of print, but you can find it used online. But he wrote a series of essays on the liturgical year. Basically, he was asked to do this because of the liturgical renewal movement in the Roman Catholic tradition after Vatican II. And so so this excerpt comes from his one of his essays in this volume, where he writes about Advent. So what I want to do is I'm going to read the quote. And for folks who are on Zoom, I'm sharing my screen, so you'll be able to see this quote here. And then I'm just going to ask you if there is a word or a phrase from the quote that speaks to you this morning as you think about Advent, or just as you're gathered here at this time in your life. And you'll just kind of share those out loud if you'd like when I invite you to. And then I'm going to give you a little more time to discuss the quote at your table. And you've got some a couple of questions there to prompt you. And for those of you who are on Zoom, I'll read the question to you so you can ponder that and maybe put stuff in the chat if you would like with your Zoom group. But let's just kind of hear this first quote together, and then I'll just ask you for a word or a phrase that speaks to you. Merton writes, "The church, in preparing us for the birth of a great prophet, a savior and a king of peace, has more in mind than seasonal cheer. The Advent mystery focuses the light of faith upon the very meaning of life, of history, of humanity, of the world of our own being. In Advent, we celebrate the coming and indeed the presence of Christ in our world. We witness to his presence even in the midst of all its inscrutable problems and tragedies. Our Advent faith is not an escape from the world to a misty realm of slogans and comforts which declare our problems to be unreal, our tragedies inexistent. The fact remains that our task is to seek and find Christ in our world as it is and not as it might be. The fact that the world is other than it might be does not alter the truth that Christ is present in it and that his plan has been neither frustrated nor changed. Our Advent is the celebration of this hope. So that's a fairly long quote, a lot in it. But is there a word or a phrase that sort of speaks to you or jumps out to you in this quote? A time for reflection. Yeah, Louise. An Advent mystery, okay? Something to explore. Yeah, Blair? Christ in our world as it is. Yes. His plan has not been frustrated or changed. And I'm repeating these for our Zoom folks, so that's fine. The world does not alter the truth that Christ is present in it. Yes, it ends with hope. This is our hope. Yeah, thanks, Edna. Okay. Well, I'm going to give you about 7 or 8 minutes to share at your tables anything else you would like to about the quote, or there are some questions here for you to ponder and to share. So, and for folks on Zoom, if you want to do that on your own or put your ponderings in the chat for your group. So, one question, how do you witness to Christ's presence in the world amidst all its inscrutable problems and tragedies? And then the second question, how is this quote from Merton hopeful for you in this Advent season? So, as I said, take about 7 or 8 minutes to do some discussing or sharing at your table on these questions or anything else that struck you about the quote, and then we'll move on to the second reading. You didn't know you're going to have to talk to each other this morning, did you? Take about another minute to wrap up your conversation, and we'll move on to the next quote. So about another minute. All right. Let's bring this conversation to a close, and we'll open up another one. All right, can I have your attention again, please? It's just so lovely that you're enjoying your being with one another. So, all right, we're going to shift our attention now to a poem that Merton wrote titled Advent. And as I said, he was prolific. So these are the collected poems of Merton. So you could use it as a doorstop, I guess. If you don't mind. But I mean, it's really fabulous poetry in here. But so Advent. So I'll read it and once again ask you for a word or a phrase. Charm with your stainlessness these winter nights skies and be perfect. Fly vivider in the fiery dark, you quiet meteors, and disappear. You moon, be slow to go down. This is your full. The four right quiet roads make often silence towards the four parts of the starry universe. Time falls like manna at the corners of the wintry earth. We have become more humble than the rocks, more wakeful than the patient hills. Charm with your stainlessness these nights in Advent, holy spheres, while minds as meek as beasts stay close at home in the sweet hay, and intellects are quieter than the flocks that feed by starlight. Oh, pour your darkness and your brightness over all our solemn valleys, you skies, and travel like the gentle virgin toward the planet's stately setting, O white full moon, as quiet as Bethlehem. So is there a word or a phrase or a impression you want to share? Yeah, thanks, Dan. Yeah, so for those of you on Zoom, Dan was talking about living in Kentucky and actually went to graduate school in Louisville. So I missed Merton. I was there in the 80s. So, but yeah, and Merton, he for a long time really wanted to be a hermit and was not granted that permission by the abbot until sort of late in his monastic career. But he writes from the hermitage often in that way of just describing the holiness of the hills and the praise of the birds and those kinds of things. So the stars and yeah, but you're right. In the poem, you can just, you're there, you know, you can feel the breath come out of your breath, fog and the cold. But words or phrases from the poem itself. Yes. Okay, quiet and silence are words that repeat. Diane? Yes, so claim the quietness of Advent. Yeah, quiet is the patient hills, I think. Yeah, Anne-Marie? It's great. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to give you, once again, about 7 or 8 minutes to share some in your table. And you've got some questions for prompts. But you don't have to stay with those questions. You can share whatever you'd like. But for the folks on Zoom, what would it mean for your mind to be as meek as beasts, your intellect quieter than the flocks during this Advent season? And then in what ways is this poem helpful to you as you imagine Advent? So take about 7 or 8 minutes to share. So take about another minute to wrap up your conversation. All right, I'm going to call us back together. It's time for us to sort of wind things up here. So I'm just going to... In the few minutes we have left, just ask you if you'd like to share any insights from your table groups, if there are things just insights out of the conversation that were helpful that you might want to share just with the larger group. And same thing with our folks on Zoom. I've got the chat up here. I can see your chat. I heard Dan over here reading one of Merton's favorite prayers. I thought about ending with that one, but I decided to do a different one. But that's a great, yeah. I have nowhere. No, yeah, go ahead. Yes, yeah. It is kind of an interesting paradox that in a season of quiet, yeah, and anticipation and waiting, that it's frenzied in terms of our schedules. Yeah, I was just listening to the announcements this morning. You know, it's just like, okay, it's a lot, yeah, if you come right, yeah. And this is a great plug for the Advent Quiet Day that's coming up this coming Saturday. So I hope you'll think about attending that. It'll be from 9 to noon. And we'll be either in here or in Crail B, just depending on the size of the group. But it's a way to use poetry to sort of settle and get quiet in the middle of the season. Doesn't cost anything. So think about that for next Saturday. So other bits of wisdom from your table sharing. Right. Thank you, Connie. Yes. Yeah, an experience of community. Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Yeah, Diane. That's true. Yeah, that is a challenge, I think, for a lot of contemplatives, but just for folks who want to meditate or to take that quiet time, is that you feel guilty about it because you're not being productive, or you leave that time not having a feeling of any sort, you know. So, yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to close us. Thank you. Some good testimonies for meditation. And also another plug, we do have a Sunday morning meditation group that meets at 8:30 in the library. And Gustavo is a facilitator for that. So you have opportunity to meditate in community. So 8:30 Sunday mornings in the library. All right, I'm going to close this out with this journal entry from 1962 from Thomas Merton. And he writes, 21 years ago tomorrow, since I landed here, I feel closer to my beginning than ever, yet perhaps I am near my end. The Advent hymns sound as they first did, as if they were the nearest things to me that ever were, and as if they had been decisive in shaping my heart and my life, as if I had received their form, as if there could never be any other melodies so deeply connatural to me. They are myself, words and melody and everything. Well, thank you for being here. Blessed Advent. So next Sunday, next Sunday we'll have a presentation on Advent with John Shea. He's maybe not as famous or well-known as Thomas Merton, but he is a writer. I'm not that familiar with his work. I know he wrote a book on the Gospel of John, but so he also wrote a book on sort of how we welcome Christ throughout the year and not just at Advent. And that will be the focus for next Sunday's presentation. John Fosnot will be with us to make that presentation. All right.
You can find more lectures and sermons on iTunes by searching for St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas, or visit our website at saintdave.org and click on the podcast button.